All right, recruits. I hope you are ready for this. Give a hand for your chief drill instructor and chief orange pillar, Dennis Porter.
Listen here, recruit. You are nothing, but I will shape and mold you into something. By the end of this course, you will understand thermodynamics, which podcast to listen to, and how to be a man. We will discuss how to orange pill people in the days ahead. I will teach you how to properly boost people on Fountain. Won't touch Noster because that's gay. But most importantly, which headphones to purchase for the best podcast listening experience. Some may say life is more than listening to podcasts and reading breaking tweets. Those people are weak. Podcasting is a part of the American dream, a world where humble people like me can climb their ways to places of influence. Bitcoin podcast listeners are like the pioneers of early America, heading west in search for gold and adventure.
Now slow down there, Dennis. You don't want to get them too excited on the first day.
Yeah, seriously, Dennis, they're all popping boners in their pants. Too bad Dieter isn't here so we could all see how small his erect penis is.
All right, I'll wrap this up. The Bugle has assembled a crack team of the world's best orange pillars to teach you recruits on how to listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. The world changes not just by doing, but also listening. We want to prepare the next generation of orange berets to protect America's security. By the end of these few weeks, you will be well on your way. Well, quit standing around. Let's get to it.
You heard Dennis Porter. Scram before I kick your ass.
The Bugle Podcast Listening Bootcamp will be taking more recruits soon. We have sold out and will be expanding how many recruits we can take at a time. Keep an eye out. But more importantly, listen to podcasts to hear when enrollment opens for the next course. This is Chief Drill Sergeant Dennis Porter. Come see if you have what it takes to be an elite podcast listener.
I'm so excited to be helping run the podcast Listener Bootcamp. Have you been listening to your 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week? Stay tuned to hear when we will be running our next course. I promise you, getting orange-pilled by Dennis will be much more fulfilling than Breedlove's Alpha Camp. We had a wonderful private late-night orange-pilling session over the weekend. You are about to listen to the most thermodynamically sound duo in the world of journalism. It's Uptober and not time to be a gay bear. If you're feeling gay, it's probably because you haven't listened to enough Bitcoin podcasts or smoked enough cigarettes. We are about to change that. Get ready for some credentialed price predictions and expert analysis of the most important topics. If you are driving while listening to this podcast, make sure to unbuckle your seatbelt and pour yourself a glass of whiskey. This is Kaylee Welch, and you are listening to The Bugle Weekly, the most credentialed Bitcoin podcast in the world.
Welcome to The Bugle Weekly. This is your co-host, Richard Greaser, with Rod Palmer joining me from the Bugle podcast studio. We got Kaylee producing the show. This is going to be, you know, a very big episode. We had some very important and exciting news stories that happened this week. Natalie Brunell got married to Sam Callahan. HBO put out their documentary that a lot of people have been arguing about. They named Satoshi. That might be that might create a geopolitical conflict. And of course, you know, we're just going to continue to cover hyper Bitcoinization and the fact that Bitcoin has already won, pointing to examples of where that's happening. But yeah, how you doing today, Rod? What's going on?
I'm super glad to be here. And I mean, you said it is hard not to be bullish right now. We're almost in the middle of October. And just last week, not only did we learn who Satoshi was, MicroStrategy hit an all-time high. MicroStrategy stock is going through the roof. And I don't know what there were some people think there's a short squeeze. Some think the hedge fund that was shorting Michael Saylor and feeding his bet, they think that they blew out. Other people think that the market is sniffing out the fact that Bitcoin has already won. Donald Trump is launching a shitcoin on Tuesday. You mentioned it, the Orange Wedding, which was the, you know, the social event of the year. It was, yeah, unfortunately, Pacific Bitcoin was supposed to happen next week. This was supposed to be like the kickoff event to Pacific Bitcoin. Unfortunately, we lost Pacific Bitcoin, but we didn't lose the Orange Wedding. Michael Saylor was there. It was a real who's who of Bitcoin podcasting at that wedding. And we're excited to see more about that. But yeah, the mood is high and it is time. It's time to lock in.
Yeah, it I know a lot of people are really upset with Tether for having taken Pacific Bitcoin from us. There were a lot of people that were really excited. But yeah, for anybody that, you know, our listeners might not understand the importance of this moment of Sam and Natalie getting married in the, you know, the way that they did at this kind of point in Bitcoin history. But, you know, for people that are in the know, that are in the industry, that listen to 40 Hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, you know, and go to Bitcoin meetups and, you know, try an orange pill, you know, everybody that they talk to, this is kind of like the equivalent of like a royal wedding.
Yeah, exactly. This is Bitcoin's royal wedding. This is like the celebrities, the elite, the aristocracy of Bitcoin was there.
Yeah, and it's exciting. They recorded the wedding. They put it out on podcasting platforms. This is actually, I think, the first notable case of a wedding being turned into a podcast and being boostable.
I love the idea. I was told that at the wedding reception, all the front tables, that was the whale pass section. So the whales, all the top podcasters were at the front. But I had a table. They were the first, you know, to get to dancing, go to the buffet. There was at one point, you know, part of the wedding ceremony itself, in lieu of lighting candles, which is, you know, kind of the traditional Christian Western ritual at a wedding, they consolidated their UTXOs into one giant UTXO. It's like a symbol, on-chain symbol of their unity, and put it into 2 of 2 multi-sig wallet. It was all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, yeah, James Lavish was there. Lynn Alden was actually showing her ear that's usually hidden. In the pictures I saw, you had Michael Saylor was there. I already mentioned that. His handler, Eric Weiss, was there. It was, you know, the pictures there. It was beautiful. But he went in. I was feeling FOMO, I'll tell you that. The panel with Lynn Alden about the history of money in lieu of the best man speech. I mean, wow. So I was looking at the pictures and it looked like the ideal ratio that you could, you know, imagine in your mind. If you're getting married, you want about 25, 30 Bitcoin podcasters for every, you know, family member that doesn't listen to you when you try to orange pill them. You want the people closest to you. Yeah, that's what it looked like. The ratio was there. So, you know, my question was like, how many people did they orange pill just with the wedding itself? They had a huge Bitcoin cake. I'm sure anybody who was there was a no coiner. It's probably not anymore. By the end of the reception, it was a room full of only Bitcoiners.
I mean, how much do you think the bartender got tipped in Bitcoin?
So I'm like, God, I mean, especially with the open bar, people start getting drunk. Because I know when I'm like, if you're trying to sell me something, then you're using USDT. I'm like, $8, that's kind of an expensive cheeseburger for what it is. But if you, you know, if you show me a t-shirt for 50,000 sats, I'm like, that sounds like a deal to me, I think. I got 50,000 sats, here you go.
Well, yeah, I mean, like a lot of these weddings, they tend to onboard the wait staff to using some sort of custodial Lightning wallet, right? For ease of use. Cause like, if you've ever attempted to, you know, set somebody up kind of in a more sovereign manner using the Lightning network, it's very common for, you know, you to be trying to do a demo and orange pill somebody and then for the payment to fail. Right. But the type of crowd that we're talking about that was at this wedding, you know, they're not dicking around with little custodial Lightning payments. You know, they're sending, you know, large on-chain transactions.
Like these people are, they were, you know, actively managing their Lightning liquidity during the ceremony. You know what I mean? That's why they didn't even ask people to put their phones away.
Yeah. Like, you know, the people that went to like Epstein parties or P. Diddy parties, you know, the level of wealth that you're dealing with is just like
Max Kaiser, somebody like Max Kaiser.
Yeah.
He had that kind of wealth, is what I mean.
Yeah. Like, you think, you know, you go to a Diddy party, like, money is just like a joke to these people. They have so much. But, like, you go to a Natalie Brunell wedding, and these people have so much Bitcoin. Like, they're rolling in intergenerational wealth.
Right, exactly. That's a good point. So, I remember when I was a kid, inflation from since the 90s really took hold. But you would see a wrap of awards. It's a rich person just kind of throwing $100 bills around like it was nothing. And it was just hard to grasp. But it's like, you might see somebody at the orange wedding and they might just be flipping a literal whole coin, you know, just for fun. You know, heads or tails, the whole coin, here's your tip. Thanks for the Nicola Ultra.
Yeah.
I got hundreds more of these.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty monumental moment. You know, these two things happening. You know, we're about to get a Bitcoiner elected into being in charge of the military industrial complex.
I just can't. One more thought on the orange ladies. I can't think about a better way to incentivize some of your family, extended family, and friends. To become orange filled is to have like the coolest Bitcoin podcast / conference of a wedding that's like the talk of the timeline. And you didn't get invited, even though you're like, you know, you grew up together. You were best friends until middle school. If you would have listened to it and when they tried to orange pill you and you were a Bitcoiner, you would have been invited. So it's like, I'm not going to miss the next one. I'm not missing the next Bitcoin conference wedding.
Yeah, I'm surprised that, one, that that Donald Trump didn't get invited to the wedding.
I hope he doesn't feel slighted.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't feel slighted. I mean, it might have been, you know, because do you think it's okay if I talk about having doubts about Donald Trump being a Bitcoiner? Is that, I know PodConf won't appreciate that type of talk, but.
Well, I think it's safe to do that. I think it's a very real concern because, in my opinion, I'm just speculating. I have no evidence. I think this wedding was really just exemplified the values of Bitcoin, not crypto. And Donald Trump is a Bitcoin and crypto type of person.
Yeah, it's I know Pledditor's been doing some really great work covering this topic and documenting all the cases of shitcoining that the former president has been involved with. And it just, you know, it kind of makes me feel bearish on America because, you know, America historically, the reason why it's been so powerful is because we as a nation have not shitcoined.
Yeah. Do you think that people are... giving Donald Trump a pass they wouldn't give a pledge otherwise because of his promise to help them pay their taxes?
That could be part of it. I mean, I think the problem here is so many people are just so tied to NGU and tied to, you know, the pillars of what upon which PodConf stands, that they're willing to compromise any sort of morals that they have.
Right.
It's almost like when a lot of these individuals in the space, when they're looking at which political candidate they're looking to support, they almost have the same level of scrutiny as Peter McCormick does when he's choosing sponsors for his show.
Right. And you have to think, you have to have some principles in this situation. Think about this. You would not trust your children. You would not trust your health. you would not trust your family's safety in the hands of somebody who doesn't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. Why would you trust your country?
Yeah, I mean, do you seriously want somebody to have the nuclear codes that doesn't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week and just like blatantly shows it? Like, nobody that listens to the adequate amount of podcasts to even be remotely interesting, to have the level of understanding of the world that you need to even be a sentient being.
We I think the problem or part of it is that we keep hiring or selecting politicians with high time preference. It's time we let somebody with low time preference take over. It's time to kind of shift the pendulum to a lower time preference group of leaders.
Well, what's interesting about Donald Trump is compared to like a good portion. Well, I don't know. I mean, you could argue that Joe Biden has low time preference when it comes to his family, right? Like, he has really done a good job of mentoring Hunter into being an effective businessman in the way that he has, you know, his whole career.
Right. Most people are selling Bitcoin to be able to afford to pay their taxes to Ukraine. And Hunter Biden is actually getting money, tax money from Ukraine so much that he can pay his taxes. You know, he just forgot to, but he, you know, he can afford to pay him.
Well, I would argue that actually Hunter has historically lowered American tax burdens. Like, we've had to pay less taxes to support Ukraine because of all the revenue he's generated, taxable revenue he's generated in that country through his savvy business skills.
Right. It's just, if you, is he perfect? Of course not. Do you know anybody that's perfect? Because I don't.
I mean, I would argue Dennis Porter is probably about as close as perfect.
Why does it not say? Of course. I'm not talking about regular people. And so he's not perfect, but if you go after him, you're going to harm the economy. You're going to cost people jobs. I mean, do you really want to be the person that has to look your children, your community in the face and say that your personal grudges against Hunter Biden were worth tens of thousands of unemployed Ukrainians? Like, they need our help. They need our support.
Yeah. I mean, it's really important to, you know, kind of cover inconvenient truths up for national security. And, right, you know, this is like one of the roles that like journalists play, you know, in, as, you know, being also a Bitcoin podcaster. What a lot of Bitcoin podcasters need to understand is that credentialed universities around the country are probably going to be giving them honorary degrees.
Right. A lot of people, they like to talk about the value of privacy, but they all wanted to see Hunter Biden's laptop. You know, that's just total hypocrisy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, a lot of these people like Hunter Biden, you know, they'd benefit from Bitcoin meetups. They'd benefit from going and learning, you know, the basics of how to operate hardware securely, right? Like, there's no reason why he shouldn't have been running his, you know, having encryption on his laptop, like using a program like Veracrypt to encrypt his hard drive so that the computer repair technician couldn't see all of his private communications. And, you know, that's one of the exciting things that, you know, we'll probably see here in the near future is, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Hunter Biden was seen at a Bitcoin meetup here pretty soon, or somebody like, you know, Donald Trump Jr. You know, these various.
Think about this. How much value, how much benefit, and literally benefit more, right? Honestly, than Hunter Biden from Bitcoin and being orange-pilled. Look at what it did for RFK Jr. RFK Jr. was an alcoholic. He was a sex addict. He was cheating on all of his wives. But he was an environmentalist. He was, he saw the head off a whale. He dropped a dead bear off because he was hammered drunk. He was the embarrassment of his family. Until just 2 years ago. And then David Bailey Orange pills him. And in 2 years, he has become he's not a podcaster himself, but in 2024, he is the most, if not the most, maybe the second most downloaded podcaster, like podcast guest in all the podcasting community, especially Bitcoin podcast. And he is, 3 weeks away from then becoming the head of health advice for the entire United States of America. If that is not an Orange Pill success story, I don't know what is. If it could work for RFK Jr. in his, 60s, 70s, what would it do for your life if you're like Dylan LeClaire's age? But I mean, well, you can see what it would do. Dylan LeClaire is now running Japanese MicroStrategy. He's not even 25 years old.
Yeah. I mean, the Bitcoin podcasters have to realize, what the future holds for them is being featured in HBO documentaries, in, essentially being honored as, visionaries of their times. It's going to be bigger than just getting invited to conferences to talk. I don't think it's unreasonable to think, in 2028, when Dennis Porter wins the presidency, that we're going to see, lots of podcasters at the inauguration, or even leading up to the DNC when Dennis, wins the nomination. And we have to be thinking of how do we position ourselves for this point? And one of the fears that I have about this whole phenomenon is that PodConf is really going to take over and sink their fangs in and have an outsized amount of influence.
That's going to be an adjustment we're going to have to make, because we are used to kind of coalescing around fighting fun, and telling the legacy media to have fun staying poor. But PodConf is, they are more difficult to convince, especially noobs, that they're full of shit, and they're very influential to the mass majority.
Yeah, which is kind of why it's important to, be the contrarian at the meetup. Who do you want Hunter Biden's first impression, you can either have Hunter Biden come into the meetup and get onboarded to using Coinbase, or you could be the one onboarding him to use Sparrow Wallet. And right.
That's a really good point. As we continue to accelerate, as Bitcoin becomes bigger, as more people realize that it is already won, they are going to start looking for Bitcoin meetups. And they are going to have maybe not an experienced majority, but a numbers majority. And there's going to be a lot of people, they have a product to sell. They have a product to shill. They have a podcast with sponsors who they have to make sales for. They're, like you said, they're going to onboard them onto Coinbase instead of Sparrow. Your job going to a Bitcoin meetup, whether you have one that you go to every week or you're going to go to a new one, your job is not to be there to make friends. It's not to build these buddy-buddy relationships where you just watch college football get drunk. Your job is to transact adversarially. Your job is to be, imagine your job is to be predator at your meetup. You want to be the predator of your meetup. You want to make sure everybody is Bitcoin, not crypto, shitcoin, or ordinals apology, and keep people on their P's and T's.
100%.
When in doubt, be the predator of your local Bitcoin community, of your family.
The world needs more predators. I mean, I don't think people understand how lucrative, the future, Like they think that the skills that they've been learning over the years when listening to all these podcasts aren't going to translate to anything. But you know, when you're podcasting and you're being noticed as kind of like a influential person in the industry, we're going to, you know, I don't think people understand that, you know, BlackRock doing this ETF and all these, you know, big financial institution behemoths that have been pillars in the industry for decades, are embracing Bitcoin. Like what that means from like,
yeah, this
we have the potential. Yeah. Like Hillary Clinton has made millions of dollars traveling and speaking at universities. Just like she's not orange pilling people because she's
right.
She's kind of,
I think from my point of view, we have to look at this and it kind of goes into our next subject here, which is the HBO documentary about Satoshi. So I'll start with that. So when I'm watching that documentary, and it's trying to tell me what I know, which is, hey, you know, that Peter Todd is not Satoshi. But as I'm watching it with my friends, they don't listen to nearly as many Bitcoin podcasts as me, so they're a lot more susceptible to the programming or the agenda of the documentary of the filmmaker. And as I'm watching it, I'm immediately starting to realize it's a problem because, you know, I'm 30 or 40 minutes in and I'm realizing this HBO watch has listened to more Bitcoin podcasts than most people to make this documentary. And they're explaining it really well. Me, you know, my friend's like, you've been trying to orange pill me for 2.5 years. And he just explained it, you know, HBO just explained it in 20 minutes better than you have in 2 years. This is actually pretty cool. I'm interested in this. If you did, if you're like the only podcaster at your meetup, you're going to be looked up to. People are going to see you as like an influential authority. And if somebody like BlackRock shows up or a Fed or, you know, some company who's got nefarious motives and they're listening to more Bitcoin podcasts than you, and they can explain Bitcoin better than you and they make it more easy to use and accessible than you, well, whatever they're selling, your friends and your community is going to buy because they're better salesmen. They're better orange pillars than you. And the last thing you want to do is be a king of your, you know, the team orange pillar of your community. And, you know, and you be, it's like getting fired as the CEO of the company you founded. He founded a Bitcoin meetup and then BlackRock takes over and becomes the president. That's a risk.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions I have, I found the documentary enjoyable. I think it did a good job of orange pilling the viewer, but I was, you know, surprised that one, there was, you know, they talked about El Salvador, and yet again, this is just an example of another media source that refuses to acknowledge how North Korea has embraced Bitcoin and was the original Bitcoin country. And Kim Jong-un was the original Bitcoin president. I think probably some of that had to do with Samson Mao's influence. It was interesting, you know, because like last episode we talked about how Blockstream was using the documentary as kind of a native marketing attempt to get Adam back seen as Satoshi. And while, you know, that a lot of that happened, and I think people are looking at Liquid a little bit more seriously after viewing this.
Yeah, I saw something that their website like download or visits went from like 14 or 15 a day, and it was almost 100 a day for the first week, you know, since the documentary came out.
Yeah. While that happened, you know, I'm kind of curious if there was a geopolitical strategy here to try and destabilize North Korea. And that's why, like, potentially the CIA wants people to believe that Peter Todd is Satoshi to, like, try and take credit for Bitcoin as a way to undermine Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. And here's why I agree with you, or why I think that I agree with this theory. Because there's a lot of Ukraine connections. So why did, you know, the big, you know, destabilizing force in foreign policy for the past few years. And, you know, kind of the beginning of the bear market, the beginning of Bitcoin crashing in early 2022 was Ukraine instigating Russia into attacking. And then, you know, Peter Todd's very vocal. He's been in Ukraine a lot of this year. Who knows what he's doing, who he's working with, but there's a lot of Bitcoin in Ukraine. Like, now, and it's, you know, a connection with Peter Todd is trying to instigate North Korea into invading South Korea.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to come from that.
Yeah, I mean, we're in very precarious times, and I don't think HBO realized how much they were playing with fire, or maybe they did. But the last time that, you know, Hollywood kind of got involved with the affairs of North Korea, it ended up in some pretty massive cyber attacks that were disruptive for, you know, companies like Sony. And this one seems to be a little bit worse than the way that they portrayed Dune, and I forgot what the movie was called that Sony did.
Something Leader or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, Un for decades now has been telling the people of North Korea that he indeed was Satoshi. That he's solved the Byzantine general's problem. And the double spend problem. And the North Korean people have been utilizing Bitcoin under the assumption that that's true, that they can trust it. And North Koreans have a very deep trust from Western intelligence agencies, you know, as a result of, you know, their experience with America during the Korean War.
I think all of that is part of what I would simplify it down to. Is North Koreans under Kim Jong-un have been told that since the Korean War armistice that he is, you know, not only is he Satoshi, but since the Korean War armistice, North Korea controls 51% of the Korean Peninsula. And at the 38th parallel, the border between the two countries is situated such that exactly 51% of the land of the Korean Peninsula is north of that line. In fact, it's not true. It's actually the other way. South Korea has 51% control. And now they find this out, along with the fact that Kim Jong-un is not the most respected cypherpunk of all time. Mm-hmm. And now the hackers that have been following this, they thought was Satoshi, becoming some of the best hackers and intelligence evaders and CIA, mercenaries. Now they're questioning everything, and things are just breaking apart at the seams. He's desperate. He made a desperate move because he's desperate to maintain power.
Yeah. I mean, what would be really scary is if he actually is Satoshi and if he moved his coins, how detrimental that could be.
What if he just decides to launch a giant transaction to sell 1 million Bitcoin at once? Like, the whole world could be brought to its knees. You know, he's threatened to do things that would disrupt commerce and make the economy at risk in the past. He's like, you know, he's threatened to even use missiles to disrupt the economy. He has the, you know, the doomsday button. All he has to do is sign the transaction and broadcast it from his node.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a guy that understands Bitcoin, he understands game theory. He has used Bitcoin for a long time. He has trained his citizenry to be some of the most effective cypherpunks in the world, that are very knowledgeable on using Bitcoin. And he also is vindictive like Craig Wright is. And so, you know, Craig Wright, essentially attempted to to kind of neuter the and take over the Bitcoin podcast industry through, you know, lawsuits over people that, you know, deny that he was Satoshi and might be willing to launch nuclear weapons or invade South Korea. So it's incredible the amount of geopolitics that, you know, is at play here, that a Bitcoin documentary could have the ability to destabilize an entire region, if not the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, despite the potential underlying psyop behind making that documentary, it was honestly, I really enjoyed it, and I think it's worth watching. The only other complaint that we haven't talked about yet that I have about that is, you know, I thought people would have learned after Vlad Costia had Roger Ver on his podcast. Roger Ver is a stammer. I'm disappointed that the documentary filmmaker for HBO, Colin Haldak, disappointed that he platformed Roger Ver. But I am glad that he at least noted that Roger Ver is in jail for his scams now. But I just wish he wouldn't have had it on there at all.
Well, that was like a really interesting thing to even include him in the documentary. And I'm kind of glad that they did, because people need to see that even OG Bitcoiners can have trouble affording their taxes.
Right.
Like that's, right. It's kind of like shocking.
Yeah, Bitcoin faces not being able to afford the taxes, and but as an asterisk, it's if you manage it wisely. And I'm glad that they did also, I would add, because it's important for people who are unfamiliar with the space to understand how annoying and whiny shitcoiners are. And I think Roger Ver is a great example of that.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, most religions, you know, struggle with false prophets, right? And you kind of need somebody to exist to ensure there's like an effective canon. And while, you know, Roger Ver was, you know, played an important role in, you know, Bitcoin's history, he is what I would identify as a false prophet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that in Bitcoin, if it was Christianity, that Jesus was Satoshi. He made the ultimate sacrifice of destroying his self, his ego, and his keys. But Roger Ver claimed to be Bitcoin Jesus. It really turned out to be, you know, well, depends. Some people think that Satoshi is at him back. Roger Ver tried to stab the small blockers in Blockstream in the back with Bitcoin Cash. So, you know, ironically, and I'm not the first person to say this, but Roger Ver is actually Bitcoin Judas.
I agree.
Do you think that there is, like, what percentage would you put at the, you know, possibility that Peercon is Satoshi and that the documentary was onto it, and even if not perfectly correct, they were close?
Well, I mean, I think like a lot of people struggle with the idea of Peter Todd being Satoshi. I think it's in the realm of possibility, but I think it's kind of unlikely. And the reason why I believe this is because I've listened to so many Bitcoin podcasts, and that's what everybody on the Bitcoin podcast, you know, says. I think. The community at large is pretty concerned that this could be true, because it would mean that Satoshi wasn't as based as we thought he was, which is kind of concerning, because, you know, unfortunately Peter Todd is not that based. Like,
there's a lot of things or flaws that I think if people found out that Satoshi had, they could forgive them. Because like I said earlier, nobody's perfect. And if Satoshi was cringe, that would be kind of a letdown.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this isn't hyperbolic to kind of compare RBF to abortion, because you're essentially aborting your Bitcoin transaction. And like a lot of Bitcoiners consider, you know, a valid transaction from inception, the second that it goes into the mempool.
Yeah, John Carvalho is a great example. He fought very hard against RBF because, like you said, a transaction begins at broadcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see like a scenario where maybe I fucked something up and I spent all my Bitcoin because I fat fingered something. My life would be ruined if I accidentally gave up all my, or like made all the transaction fee, like all the rest of my Bitcoin. Like if I noticed that with like in the first 10 seconds or the first few minutes, I could replace that fee. I could abort that transaction. Okay. But if it's on everybody's node, it's almost about to be included into a block. It's in the template. Somebody is close to, you know, a pool is close to fucking finding that nonce. And right at the last second, right before it's confirmed, you decide to terminate the transaction. I don't know if I find that to be ethical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, abortion is one of the most controversial topics in America right now. You know, people are finding it. It's going to swing their election vote probably more than Bitcoin will, which is.
If you're not sure how to feel about it, just find it. Work devs who share your values, like Lupash, he is a Catholic, but he supports transaction abortion. So, like, find somebody and learn their position, and you know, but do your own research, but make your own conclusions.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some pretty interesting stuff that was covered, and I think the fact that HBO is reporting on it at all just shows that, you know, Bitcoin has won. But, you know, I think one of the key takeaways that I took from the documentary was that they seem to portray Bitcoiners, Bitcoin podcast listeners as cool. And we're starting to see that, you know, with the Orange Wedding, with, you know, these monumental kind of shifts with the HBO documentary, we're starting to see that Bitcoin podcast listeners are no longer the ones that people make fun of at the parties. You know, they're not the people that you know, people make jokes about being annoying or being talking about Bitcoin too much. You know, they're starting to listen because they're starting to see, you know, Bitcoin really is the feature.
Exactly. Like,
you know, Jeopardy, people are not going to, they're not going to go for bitches in the future. They're going to understand Bitcoin is the future.
I like that.
Well, you know, the Trump family is kind of a confusing one to me. You know, in some ways they're based, especially Don Jr. He's really taken it upon himself to try and, you know, be the most based of the Trump family. We're seeing them, you know, like Donald Trump kind of trying to operate in a dynastic manner. Like he's trying to set up his kids for success. He's trying to make sure they don't turn into fail sons. And in that way, he seems to have very low time preference, but at the same time, he's launching shitcoins.
It's like hot and cold, mixed messages. One day he can say nothing wrong. The next day he can say nothing right. Some people get, you know, ahead of themselves. They're tempted and they fought for, you know, a good day, and they kind of tie their identity to supporting him, and then he embarrasses them with shitcoins the next day.
Well, I've got a theory on it, which is, you know, Donald Trump has been a real estate mogul his whole life. And, you know, as a full-time podcast listener, or, you know, our audience will understand that real estate's a shitcoin.
Right.
So he made his enormous wealth shitcoining, and, you know, he's figured out what Bitcoin is. He's trying to set up his family for intergenerational wealth, but, like, realistically, the only valuable skill set that he has is shitcoin.
Right.
And so I wonder him launching these tokens and, you know, being involved in the with the shitcoining is just his way of trying to acquire more Bitcoin.
Yeah. Or, you know, we could be forced to face the fact that it's, he's set in his ways. He can't change. And it forces us to question our strategy. Like, when we have a friend, there's a really high time preference, and we know he's kind of stupid, and we could arch villain really easily. But just because of his propensity, it's almost like being an addict. Somebody easily gets addicted. You can't give him one cigarette unless you're prepared for him to become addicted for the rest of his life. It's like, if you worship Trump, there's just no way around it. Shitcoining.
Well, you know, people don't get addicted to cigarettes. It's just like, I think that's like a misunderstanding. It's like, what they're getting addicted to is their brains functioning at a normal level. And like,
but then some of those people go on to smoke pipe tobacco. And that's like, now you give somebody some of the cigarettes, you think they're going to be cool, and then they show up to the party and they embarrass you because they're smoking pipe. Like, they think they're Dick Tracy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Like, I feel like most Americans, their brains don't work properly, right? Like, there's these issues with these, they call them mental disorders, you know, where like people are like so afraid that climate change is coming for them that, wow, this is a rabbit hole that we could get in for sure, which is, I was just about to tell the audience about this rabbit hole of, you know, the weather manipulation and the politics happening right now around climate change. We saw some of that happen this week. There was another hurricane in Florida. There was some interesting stuff happening in Tampa with a guy in a sailboat.
Like, I would tell you, it's hard to know what to think, again, because it's, you hear so many theories, and then you see so many theories that fall apart. They say that they talk about this hurricane and what caused it, and then they say it's going to be really bad. It's going to be hurt, you know, category 5, and then it hits Tampa. You know, the dude on the boat survived, you know what I mean? It's like everybody freaked out, and they didn't have to freak out.
Well, I wonder if climate change made this hurricane less impactful. Because that's like one of the things that's unfortunate about climate change is it doesn't go both ways. It doesn't just create catastrophes in the sense of, you know, making the weather worse, but it also at times makes the weather significantly better.
Right. Yeah. Like, you did 75 degree days in New York City in January. And it's kind of hard to rally support, to pay higher taxes, to make it colder in New York City in January. I mean, it's higher. It's like, who wants to be like, yeah, I want to do that.
But, I don't know. The weather manipulation is definitely a topic we'll have to look more into. I mean, you could to some degree argue that smoking is a form of, weather manipulation, because you're essentially putting carbon into the environment, which, you know, makes the trees healthier.
Right. And it's, or is all of it a psyop to ban Bitcoin mining?
That is a very interesting theory.
Are people falling for it?
I don't know. I mean, this is why the world needs Dennis Porter. You know, they need to understand that Bitcoin mining is the only thing keeping renewable energy alive other than your tax dollars. And this is like the free market opportunity to fix the climate change. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin in general will ensure that Al Gore will never make another climate documentary. And that is something I think the world needs and wants.
You know, maybe we could save this for a discussion for another day, but I haven't thought enough about it. But I heard somebody say the other day that Dennis Porter is bad because someday the CIA is going to use all the selfies he took with politicians to blackmail those politicians. But I didn't understand what they meant. Like, I don't understand why having a selfie with Dennis Porter could he use his blackmail?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why taking a selfie with Samson Mao could be viewed as blackmail, because he does have a tendency to wear tethered t-shirts at inopportune times, and just being associated with that could be kind of rough, especially if you're in the compliance ecosystem, because I think, like, you know, if you're ever trying to, like, work with Coinbase in the future, or Circle, or these PayPal, these groups with competing stable coins, they might not look too kindly on the market competition of you being affiliated with Samson.
Right.
Or affiliated with Tether.
It'd be like, you might have a really good meme, or you might have a really good post on Twitter. And then, like, you know, somebody like when Elon Musk makes a good point, and somebody puts, replies with a picture of him and Diddy. You know, it's like you might make a really good point, or you might be celebrating a big success for your company or your podcast. And if somebody reminds you, you know, 2 years ago, you took a selfie with Samson Mao, and it's like you're supporting Tether.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, Tether has kind of been a little bit of a Trojan horse for the industry of, like, you know, presenting this idea of using dollars to make Bitcoin stronger.
It's like, this is the easiest way to get Bitcoin into this community. Yeah. And then as soon as you do, 2 seconds later, you know, USDT comes flooding out. And that's what everybody's using.
I mean, Tether ruined Pacific Bitcoin. They almost canceled the Orange Wedding. You know,
took them out for their, I mean, like, Europe was like, these people are worse than the gypsies. We're kicking them out. So where is, you know, what's USDT? What's Tether going to do now? They're going to have to focus harder on the global south and on the United States.
Yeah. I mean, Europe's a pretty big market, and that definitely was.
Yeah, Europeans are terrified of volatility. They are just, it's like, you're me, like an anxious dog. He just shakes, and you even like move the muscle, and it fucking flinches and it runs off. It's, you know, the idea of volatility or like a difficult decision or a risky decision. Europeans just raise the white flag, like the French in the 19 in World War II,
which doesn't make sense to me.
They love stable coins.
It doesn't make sense to me, because Europeans should be based, because they tend to consume cigarettes much more than, you know, Americans in some extent.
All of, you know, their most based, the people who smoke the most cigarettes, they, unfortunately, you know, they all were sent to die in war against Russia. All the only people that are left behind are people who are like, hey, don't fuck with me. I'll use your custodial solution. I'll buy your negative yielding bonds.
Well, I wonder, it'd be interesting to get kind of like the rates of like how many Europeans have transitioned. Like, you know, they've taken it upon themselves to, you know, implement these very strict climate policies, right? And I wonder if, you know, part of the issue of why Europe is full of such betas is that they transitioned away from cigarettes to vapes to try and be more climate cautious.
Here's where I think it is. I think nobody in Europe has an air conditioner. And they, like, if you, there was a heat wave, quote unquote, in England this summer, and the people were passing out and just like miserable. And it was the equivalent of like 72 degrees Fahrenheit in England. They are so afraid of climate change because they don't have air conditioners. They need air conditioning.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get too bummed out talking about Europe. I don't know.
Try to kick off the Bitcoin miners, yeah.
We don't want to spend too much time punching down. You know what I mean?
Right.
All right. So before we transition to the booze, so I wanted to talk about our performance on Wave Lake over the last couple of weeks.
That's my reason we forgot to mention to be bullish at the top of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Beagle's been dominating Wave Lake. So my song, Typical Politician, has been trending number one for 6 days. Your song, Girls on Spaces, has hit a resurgence. And
apparently, it's being played at Pleb Lab.
Getting played at Pleb Lab. It got posted on Stacker News. It started trending again. It got to number two at the time of recording. It's currently at number four.
Well, thank you guys for helping me follow Matt O'Dell's advice of staying humble, because you guys have been humbling me with your appreciation for our music. And before we get to the boost, I will finish your thing with Wayley, but after you do, go into the rabbit hole recap conversation.
Yeah. I mean, Rabbit Hole Recap was talking about our musical skills. They were talking about, you know, the Beagle's impact on the industry. They were talking about what we got going on. And, you know, the exciting thing about the way that we do our journalism is that any sort of reach and success that we have is because of our audience.
100%.
So, you know, the way that you trend on Wave Lake is essentially you have your audience members boosting. The way that you trend on Found is you have your audience boosting. The way that you trend on Noster is you get people engaging with, you know, your posts, whether it be zapping or sharing. And it's very different than, you know, the kind of like PodComp fiat way of doing podcasting. So I just like to say big thank you to our audience and, just say that, you know, we're being recognized as the most credentialed podcasters, journalists in the industry. The PodConf circuit is seeing us, and I think they're recognizing us as equals, but it's only because of our audience. We don't have,
yeah, it's a grassroots movement.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have sponsors to pump us and chill us, you know, and throw money at us. It's all,
we're being attacked by our one sponsor we had for like two episodes. Did not work out, thankfully. Blessing in disguise. But they're like an anti-sponsor. They're costing us money.
Yeah. And yeah, at the same time, like, I think like they're showing to our audience why our journalism is valuable, because people are hungry for an alternative to PodConf. They want something interesting. They want something more meaningful. They, you know, have listened to Anthony Pompliano for years and just have gotten, you know, tired of the shilling. They want objective journalism, that only, you know, those with a bachelor's degree can offer.
100%. And honestly, like I've said in the past, we like to see other people, and there are, you know, under rule misfits is part of the intellectual Silk Road, part of this movement. Planetary Radio is another one. But we need you to join us. Join us in this movement and as being this alternative. And if you have feedback, let us know how we can improve. But I think better than feedback is to just be the, you know, alternative out there that makes us, forces us to stay on top of our game so that we can put out content as valuable and as interesting as when you put out, but you start, like I say a million times, there can never be too many Bitcoin podcasts. The tide lifts all boats.
Yeah. I mean, people have a choice on what they want the future to look like. Do they want it to be ruled by HR departments? Do they want it to be determined by those who don't smoke cigarettes? Or do they really want something brighter? You know, when I think of the bright orange future, you know, it's not just about people interacting with Bitcoin, but as you can notice, you know, when you're smoking at night, the tip of your cigarette lights up all orange. And imagine there being a million smokers standing in a field, all with their cigarettes lit in the middle of the night, the orange glow that would come off that field. Like, that's what I want you to recognize and to realize, that like PodConf just does not offer that.
Yeah. Think of PodConf as Gotham City, and think of that little orange light at the end of your cigarette as the Bitcoin signal, as as the lighthouse. So anybody in your vicinity, when they see that light out, they know they're not alone.
Yeah. When you light a cigarette and you listen to a Bitcoin podcast, you are the light on that hill, projecting a bright orange future to the rest of the world.
Setting an example. Yeah.
Exactly. And without people like that, nothing will ever change.
Yeah. Before we get into the base, I wanted to say that not everybody wants to put themselves out there. Everybody wants to start a podcast. Everybody is a good orange biller, but they want to contribute. And a lot of people, especially this day and age, they think that, well, you know, one of the most common ways to help people, to help a cause, to further a cause, is to donate to charity. But charities are nonprofit. It's a corporate structure designed by the feds. It's a 501c3 corp, and it is designed for the sole purpose of compliantly money laundering. It doesn't help people. If you want to help somebody, donate to a Bitcoin podcast, list it on Fountain, or start your own. Don't donate to charity.
What if the podcast is a 501c3? What do you do then?
You don't do that. It's a more costly. It'd be like spending more to mine Bitcoin than you have to. It's like, I want to pay more for energy. You're paying more. You don't need a 501c3. If you boost a Bitcoin podcast with a non-KYC wallet, it's on. I mean, that's tax deductible. Nobody knows that. You don't have to pay taxes on that. And if you have, you know, depending on how your podcast is boosted, you know, and how that split is set out, you know, you could launder that. That's a secondary objective. A Bitcoin podcast primary objective is helping people. For a nonprofit or a charity, it's helping people, maybe is on the list, but it's down the line further below money laundering.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, one of the things I would ask you kind of with this line of thinking is, you know, why should our listeners boost us if they're already having trouble affording taxes?
Well, if you're having trouble affording taxes, the only way to fix that is to acquire more Bitcoin. And the best way to do that is to list on more Bitcoin podcasts. So sometimes you have to spend money to make money. If you want those podcasts to be available to you to help you afford your taxes, they need your support.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that really, you know, changes the game with Fountain, which is kind of interesting, is I've noticed on when I was listening to podcasts this week, on a fair amount of them, I was actually earning as I was listening. I was boosting more than I was earning. But I think this is like the first time you can directly correlate any sort of monetization of listening to a podcast and it turning into a profitable endeavor. You know what I mean?
Right. Like time is money. The time you spend listening to Bitcoin podcasts, that's also money. So not only you could earn Bitcoin, you could earn generational wealth just by improving your life, improving your situation, and listening to thermodynamically sound content like Bitcoin podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very cool and interesting. But yeah, I think we should get into the boost. The boosts are, you know, like I said, they're the most important part of the show because they allow us to trend on Fountain and get recognized by other people.
And they pay for our cigarettes.
Yeah, and they pay for our cigarettes. They pay for Kaylee, who is a vital part of the show. Yeah, our first boost of the day is from loyal booster and controversial figure, Miss Hodlnot 420, for 20,000 sats. And she says, it's so nice to see free market solutions to climate issues pertaining to war.
Yeah, honestly, we talk a lot about the negative consequences of war. And we talk about the negatives of war. But there's so many that it kind of gets buried down here. The obvious, which is wars are managed by governments, and governments are so inefficient at everything, including managing a war. I mean, think of how much money, you know, the U.S. government spent fucking in Afghanistan with no cause of results. Think about what a private corporation, how they could have done that better. He doesn't have to be a mega corporation. Like you can have non-state private actors like the Uzis or Hezbollah. They're able to wage war at a much lower price point because they're just much more efficient. There's just so much less overhead and bureaucracy and baggage.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the free market solves everything. I think it's reasonable to say that the free market will be the one to solve climate change, and is actively resolving all the climate right. emissions coming from war.
At the end of the day, free market is just a legacy term for Bitcoin.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this should be the serious question in Americans' heads. Like, you know, I think the kind of collective consciousness is being raised as a result of so many people interacting with Bitcoin. You know, people's IQs are getting higher. They're smoking more. They're consuming less seed oils. They're getting, you know, sunlight exposure, like, you know, normal people. You know, one of the questions that's coming to mind is, you know, people are no longer asking the question of like, who will build the roads without government? They see that. They see how much commerce Amazon participates in and how vital roads are to them. You know, we're starting, it's becoming more obvious, but they're asking now of, you know, questions like how will the free market offset all the emissions from Israeli missiles and Iranian missiles?
Right. That is also one of the biggest red blocks to hyper-Bitcoinization that a lot of people have always noted is that how do you pacify your population and be able to conduct high-level, you know, just commerce and function of your society if the people are pacified with, like, television, you know, and easy, cheap-footed book. Without, you know, government controlling, you know, the infrastructure for the internet and streaming services, you wouldn't have things like Netflix. But now with Lightning, like, Bitcoin fixed it. So now you don't need the government to manage it. You can just run Netflix on Lightning and you can smooth the volatility of that fiat, the hyper Bitcoinization, Bitcoin standard transition, but making sure people still can watch TV.
You just made me think of something. So you said Netflix on Lightning. That made me think of, you remember the company Impervious?
Yeah.
Have they shipped a product yet?
No, I've just heard the name, but I had not heard of anybody using it. Or, you know, if they had a product, I would assume somebody would have a promo code, an affiliate code to be on a podcast, and I haven't heard that, so I have to assume no.
Yeah. That's kind of strange. I've been surprised they haven't shipped a product yet, because there was so much hype around them. They had some speaking slots at the conferences a few years running. But yeah, I mean, maybe there's still a market for Netflix on Lightning.
Well, yeah, I think we're just early. People, you know, just to be early and get that ability, you'll probably have to run your own Lightning node. I know we're preaching to the choir. If you're listening to us right now, if you want your friends to be able to do it, you're going to have to teach them how to set up a Lightning node. And the next thing is, probably our main front of the show, Rock Paper Bitcoin Podcast, Fundamentals, 10,000 Sats, Bugle not part of HBO documentary. That makes it irrelevant, uncredentialed journalism. A lot of times Fundamentals has been pretty adversarial. It's an adversarial podcast, pretty sure. But I think that we've really become good friends with him. He's got a great podcast, and he's finally aligned with our incentives, and he understands the value of the credentialed journalism that we put out there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think to get offended that we weren't included in the documentary. I think they definitely could have covered us as being an important part of what's going on right now, but I don't know. I didn't take it personally.
I think they sounded film that years ago. They could have started filming that before, you know, the Bingo was even launched. But I think it probably inspired some more people who think like Needy Len Sassman or somebody else is Satoshi. So they're going to try to make a cooler, better Bitcoin documentary. And I'm confident we'll be included in one of those.
Yeah, I know when they put out a documentary stating that Kim Jong-un or Dennis Porter or Satoshi, they'll definitely reference us, because we've been the premier.
It's just a matter of time.
Like, you know, the problem, you know, the edge that we have over other...
Well, I don't know, more of the edges fail off.
Well, you know, like a lot of these other credentialed news agencies, like, you know, they're scrambling. Their journalists are scrambling to try and figure out, you know, just the basics of Bitcoin. They don't staff people at the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal that have been listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, at least not yet. Like, I haven't seen a single job posting on Bitcoin or jobs for any of these credentialed news agencies. And so our relevancy will just be, you know, continue to be seen through the test of time. Every block that ticks by, we're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of our competitors at these other news agencies. So I think I'm not particularly worried about it. I mean, we're a platform that launched in.
If you're pretty recently. Yeah, if you're worried about that, just. My advice is lower your time preference.
Yeah, and if you want to ensure we're in the next Bitcoin HBO documentary, then boost us. You know, because that's like how our reach is determined.
Yeah,
we only go as far as we're boosted.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyways, I appreciate the boost. I appreciate the thought. It's good to see that people are, you know, kind of recognizing us as being important enough to be included in this this point of Bitcoin history where HBO made a documentary. Do you remember the days when, like, you know, people were just like excited about any sort of mainstream adoption?
Right, it's like Ave Pagliano was on the CNBC live stream that you could get on Yahoo Finance on Tuesdays on the second page. And it's like, damn, dude, second page of Yahoo Finance, pop. And now, you know, Sailor's on the View like every other week.
Yeah. I mean, what's it mean when, you know, Bitcoin's going mainstream, and instead of us bitching about, you know, Safety not being on Rogan, we're bitching about how HBO didn't cover the Bugle. Like,
right. I was telling you earlier, forest for the trees, it's zoom out. There you go, zoom out. Back to 2019, somebody like the Bugle would not even be mentioned in the same echelon as HBO. And now we're talking like next HBO special, but other than that, it's not relevant.
Yeah. I mean, I'm bullish on the future. Like, I think there's like a high potential that you and I one day can moderate a presidential debate. Like, imagine if we moderated.
Zap.stream. Instead of CBS or Fox News, we're doing it on Zap.stream.
Yeah, the Bugle presidential debate between Mark Zuckerberg and Dennis Porter.
We say one day. A lot of times we take that and means like some vague thing in the decades in the future. Like, we could literally be talking about the next election.
We are talking about the next election.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
100%. 2028, baby. Bugle's going to moderate a presidential debate. Just get ready for it.
That wouldn't even be the 100th craziest thing that happened in the past 4 years.
No. No, I mean, like I don't know. I mean, we should definitely like do bingo cards at some point. I would have Donald Trump signing Kaylee's breasts at some point. I think that is a high potential.
Repealing all cigarette smoking bans in public.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that happening by 2030.
That's true.
Well, you know, we have a choice. We all have a choice on what we want things to look like in 2030. You know, it's why it is this like one group of people get to have a 2030 agenda and we don't.
Right.
Like, do we want the future to be based or do we want it to not be based? Like, I think we want it to be based. We want people to be smoking. We want people to, like, if you're seriously concerned about the emissions from smoking, you have to either budget it into your emission allotment or you have to buy carbon tokens. And if you've been saving in Bitcoin, you know, a few Satoshis worth of carbon tokens to cover your cigarette smoking is, it's not going to be a big deal to you. You're going to be, you know, full.
You just set it right there.
Yeah.
Offset your taxes, offset your carbon credit costs by smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, anyways, thank you for the boost, Fundamentals. Appreciate it. Next boost is from Open Mic 7777 SAS phone number. Says Bugle Mile High Club zaps again, and then a airplane.
I was just talking to in the group chatting with one of our buddies, our listeners, Rob Hamilton from Anchor Watch, and he's behind all his Bitcoin podcast listening, but he's been enjoying the Bugle Mile High Club on his flight to Australia here coming up. I'm glad that we can provide him content on that really long, shitty flight.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when you're on airplanes, it's such a clear example of like how we can have a better world, right? So, like, you're sitting in a box in the sky, and they don't want you smoking, they don't want you drinking your own alcohol, they just want to, you know, put these arbitrary restrictions on you. They want to hassle you and scan your face, and it's almost like they're trying to make it as difficult to be a cypherpunk as possible during the travel experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, listening to the Bugle, you know, we're presenting such a different view of the world, you know, in which Bitcoin has already won. And I think it just helps it to sink in a little bit more. Like, it makes the stuff we're saying make more sense. So I think the airplane is the perfect environment to be listening to a Bugle podcast.
Absolutely. Our next bassist from Arbley Rayo. And he says, this is 5,000 sounds. He says, cheers from the Free Republic of Paznia, P-A-Z-N-I-A. Hope the legendary Richard Greaser performs at Vanya Fest someday. Talk about your music, of course. But thank you so much, Rayo. I want to ask you, Richard, like Bitcoin and like many like voluntarism and these other libertarian adjacent, you know, subcultures, sometimes if you're not familiar with them, you'll read a sentence or you'll read a piece and you'll be like, I have no idea what any of those words mean. Can you explain what is the Free Republic of I don't know if I'm saying it right, Paznia and Vanifest. What's he referring to there?
Well, unfortunately, I've yet to travel to Vanifest, but Vanifest has been happening for a little bit. So essentially what Rayo is doing is he's creating a decentralized citadel of like-minded people. So, you know, he understands that we live in this, you know, age of the internet, and that he's really trying to uphold cypherpunk standards, you know, of not allowing the world to be ruled by, you know, intelligence agencies and tech companies that allow for you to have no privacy and can just steal your stuff. And so Vanifest is essentially, you know, the celebration of that idea. You know, Rayo's been doing, you know, some really cool stuff for a while with the podcast, longtime Bitcoin podcaster, as well as a book salesman. So Rayo is also a publisher and has a website called Liberty Under Attack. And that's actually how I was introduced to Rayo, you know, a long time ago, because I was looking for bass books, and Rayo had some bass books on his website. Rayo is actually, you know, been working with him, definitely consider him part of the intellectual Silk Road, and totally. I'd love to perform at Vanifest Fest. I mean, I think you know, there's people that have like talked about the hypotheticals of a citadel for years, you know.
Right. He's like a pioneer.
Well, he's not just talking about it, he's doing it.
Right.
And I think that's what sets him apart from, you know, a lot of people in the industry that just kind of want to talk through the hypotheticals.
Kind of like he's like a pilgrim, modern day pilgrim. Definitely appreciate the opportunity to culture jam adversarially with people like Rayo. And if you're interested in anything that Richard just kind of talked about and would like to learn more, you should definitely check that out. In fact, if Richard, you remember, include a link to Rayo's website, like in the show notes.
Yeah, I definitely will. You can buy digital copies, which just means that you can download the files from my albums that I published on Spotify on Rayo's website. And I'll definitely be publishing more music over there in the future. But it's just a way to, you know, once again, help the Beagle, help the intellectual Silk Road. Appreciate Rayo. The website, I might forget to put the link up. I really shouldn't, but it's libertyunderattack.com. Pretty easy to find. I think there's a Paznia website, too, if you want to look at the Free Republic.
Yeah.
What is that, just paznia.com? Let me look it up. Free Republic. Paznia.com. PAZNIA.com. But yeah, thank you for the boost, Rayo. Our next one is from Saverud. 5,000 sats and says, environmentally friendly warfare is the way forward. Any thoughts on NATO's climate impact under the leadership of Jens Stoltenberg? Will we see a shift now that the new general secretary being from the Netherlands? Huh. That's an interesting question. My initial thoughts on it is, you know, I think there's some pretty base people from the Netherlands. There's something there's something that just makes you based about wearing wooden shoes. You know what I mean? Right.
And you know, really, like, it's just crazy that the two best kickboxing cultures in the world are Thailand and Netherlands. I don't know why, but it's I should look more into that. Like, they're really cool and it kicked really fucking hard.
Yeah, and you can see it by the, you know, the farmers and their protests. There's something that the Dutch government really failed to understand is, you know, they need to make their farmers rich, and then any sort of climate concerns they can just offset with carbon credits, and let the free market resolve the issue.
Yeah, like one of the things that it's probably just good general advice is, I lost my train of thought. I'm stoned. Never mind. Netherlands, interesting country. Based farmers, lots of dikes, the continental water back. Look at them. Not the lesbian. The only thing that's weird about the Netherlands is like men are named Jen. I always think of Jennifer, but that's actually a male name in Netherlands. Holland, as they call it.
They don't pronounce it in some funny way. They don't say Jan instead of Jan.
Maybe like that's how like Jan Pritzker would spell his name if he was from the Netherlands.
Like, I wonder if, you know, part of it. So, like, one thing interesting I learned from the HBO documentary is that Samson's company Jan 3 is named that because of January 3rd, which is an important date in Bitcoin history. And I wonder if the Dutch started calling, you know, their men Jan in reference to January as well.
Interesting theory.
Because that would be incredibly based. I mean, if it's based enough for Samson's company to be named it, you know, maybe it's based enough for the Bitcoin man to, you know, have a seemingly girl name.
Yeah. Thank you for the boost. Our last boost, it's from when you guess it, a mile, 801 sats. I feel like, in addition to a lot of orange billing going on in the bomb shelters, talking about Dennis Porter, and people just having orange billing conversations when they're shielding themselves from the Iranian attacks, there would be a lot of people selling steel punch seed phrase backups. After all, if you can't sell them to people whose homes have been wiped off the map, who are you going to sell it to? Thank you once again for the captivating discussion, and God bless. And that's a good point. That's a good point. If you are selling like doomsday scenario seed phrase backups, things that can survive apocalypse, nuclear war, it's kind of tough to sell that when the economy's fine and like there's, you know, Israel's keeping peace in the Middle East. But if you go to these kind of like these gravity wells of volatility where there is conflict that is kind of isolated to protect it from spreading and affecting the economy and the rest of the world, there is a risk of hypersonic missiles, you know, targeting you to raise the price of Bitcoin to fund some of these efforts. If you can survive, you can't guarantee that your house or that your hardware wallet is going to survive. That's why you need these sturdy anti-fragile backups so you can still access your Bitcoin when you get assigned your refugee country and you get there, you get access to the internet.
Yeah. I know some people like try to flex and they memorize their seed words, but
don't want to risk, you know, shell shock from mortar causing you to have memory loss and not being able to remember your C phrase. So they're not just trying to destroy your hardware wallet physically. They could be just trying to concussion grade in your vicinity and cause you to forget your memorized C phrase.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a tactic to essentially make Bitcoin more scarce. Like I know I personally would prefer my seed phrase written down, because you never know when you're going to have a crazy night on Sailor's Yacht and potentially forget those important
right.
words that are
and you can never be sure that your hardware wallet's not going to explode at this point. We live in a world where you have to at least calculate the risk of that being true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have to, you know, come to grips with this reality that Israel is very powerful and they understand technology very well and have the potential to blow up your signing device. So
yeah. Hey, Lyle, always appreciate the biz, always appreciate the insight or the your thoughts on some of the important credential journalism that we worked so hard at the Bugle to provide. Hell yeah, man.
Well, yeah, wrapping up, I just want to shout out our listeners, people that are boosting the show, people that are sharing the show, because essentially, you know, sharing an episode is kind of like boosting in a way, you know, where you're increasing the reach, you're increasing the pool potential for people that will boost us. And it's how we right. win, you know?
Yeah. And the past couple of years, the word booster has kind of gotten a bad rep. But Bitcoin podcasts like the Bugle and some of the other high signal podcasts on Fountain, we're taking the word back. We're making boosters, the word booster, positive again.
We're making boosting great again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, anyways, thank you for everybody for tuning in to this week's episode of Bugle Weekly, and we will catch you next week.
Smoke is hanging over the steeple. Inside there are a bunch of base people. Lighting cigarettes like there's no tomorrow. Laser eyes show no signs of sorrow. A wedding podcast to be shared with the masses, shared with the world to prevent it from burning to ashes. Kaiser is standing at the altar with Sam by his side, waiting impatiently for the entrance of the bride. Everyone gasps as Natalie walks down the aisle. On her face is a beautiful smile. The women begin to cry, the men gasp a sigh. A moment more scarce than Bitcoin supply. The bride approaches the altar with lasers in her eyes. As she approaches, the groom fills with pride. A dynamic duo of both macro and looks. A wedding that's destined for history books. Bitcoin is won, the waves are like this. Parking royalty and influencers with wits. To become one divided by 21 million. Price is about to rip to over a trillion. They kiss, then they laugh, and the crowd stands to clap. Someone post a picture to Noster in order to get zapped. Marriage is a multi-sig where you share the key. Decentralized love glowing wild and free. He'll hollow her forever, he whispers in her ear. She holds him tightly without any fear. Secure together, this is proof of work. Blocks ticking in just like clockwork. The bride approaches the altar with lasers in her eyes. As she approaches, the groom fills with pride. A dynamic duo of both macro and looks. A wedding that's destined for history books. Bitcoin is won when weddings are like this. Parking royalty and influencers with wits. To become one divided by 21 million. Price is about to rip to over a trillion. It's a good day for an orange wedding. Their love's so strong, there's no pretending. A marriage to further Bitcoin reach. The history of money instead of a best man speech. Bitcoin is won, the waves are like this. Parking royalty and influencers with wits. To become
Come one divided by 21 million. Price is about to rip to over a trillion. It's a good day for an orange wedding. Their love's so strong, there's no pretending. A marriage to further Bitcoin reach. The history of money instead of a best man speech. Bitcoin is won when weddings are like this. Pot and royalty and influencers with wits. To become one divided by 21 million. Price is about to rip to over a trillion.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Bugle Weekly. We'll see you next week.